Our next reader is Rachel Rosalina. Never to return, the airport where science guy kissed redhead floozy.
This is from an essay called Empty Lungs. We whisper to one another or stare at the floor, waiting. The 40 of us barely fit in this small white room. Though jet-lagged, we are awake and jittery, trying to figure out what time of night it is at home. Out the window, the air is hot and smells of seawater. It has made our skin salty, our hair frizzy. A door opens behind us, and the room falls silent. I turn as a dark tan Aboriginal man struts past to the center of our folding chair semicircle. Almost naked, he wears only a breechcloth and paint. White dots and lines cover his dark body, defining muscles as they glide and squirm under his skin. His upper left arm is encircled in white paint rings. I can't tell whether they are separate or a spiral. Without introduction, he raises the long, hollow didgeridoo to his parted lips and blows. A great vibration fills the small room, and I grip my chair tighter, squeezing my knees together until they turn white. I hold my breath until my lungs burn. Now the sound is a hum, a drone, filling every corner. Up and down, the buzz stretches and tightens. I hear the whine of bees or a car motor, far away then zooming past. People clap. People exhale. The sound opens the room wide. I remember sitting in that white room, my friends fading into gray periphery. While watching, I tried to quietly imitate the Aboriginal man's continual breath, picturing the loop of air recycling, blue and ethereal. Instead, my stunted breaths evoked the memory of climbing on the dogwood tree next to my house when I was 10. It was a short tree, with one long, low branch that I often sat on just because I could. On one such climb, after a rain, my slick sneakers slid down the wet bark. It happened so fast. I grabbed frantically at the branch, but ended up stunned on my back with bark under my fingernails and no air. That's what my attempt at circular breathing felt like, empty lungs. I was at Girl Scout day camp the first time I realized I wanted to visit Australia and New Zealand. It must have been a day on travel or other cultures, because we were looking at oceanic guidebooks with glossy pages of turquoise water and coral reefs. Air's rock rising red from the flat outback, the white curves of the Sydney Opera House. I remember sitting on a splintery bench in the picnic shelter next to the pool full of loud, sunburned children and trash cans buzzing with yellow jackets. As everyone else opened their crinkled brown lunch bags and pulled out bruised bananas and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, I turned pages, running my fingertips over bright colors, entranced. I'd never wanted anything so badly before. I was 14. That was August. In October, I received a letter from People to People, a student ambassador program that sends American high school students in matching polo shirts all over the world to learn about new cultures. Somehow, I had been nominated. The letter said by a teacher or a government leader, though no one I knew had ever heard of the program. There would be a group of 40 students leaving from my area the coming summer. A three-week trip to Australia and New Zealand. I applied immediately, writing the necessary essays, getting forms notarized, and raising money. Each people-to-people excursion had an educational focus. The purpose of this trip would be to study the unique flora and fauna of both countries. I checked out every relevant and not-so-relevant book in the Johnson City Public Library and holed up in my bedroom to read. In the spring, all of those accepted met as a group once a week to learn about traveling, immersion into a new culture, and each other. Because I was homeschooled, it had been a while since I'd spent more than a couple hours with so many people my age. 3 weeks was a long time to be away from home. I was nervous, filled with anxious energy, shy about knowing so little of the world. We are in a circle on the floor of Northside Elementary's library, and I know only one other person, Alicia. We went to science camp together 3 or 4 years ago. This weekend's assignment was to bring 3 interesting facts about Australian or New Zealand culture. Those around me whisper to one another, looking behind them at rows of children's books. Most of us have never left the country. I try to remember my three facts, try to picture the words on the index cards in my bedroom. Glancing around the room, I'm pretty sure no one else bothered with index cards. I wanted to share facts beyond the obvious, so I had read an obscure but intense book about Australian exploration. Now I finger the pages, wondering if it is even possible to fit all of the drama into short phrases. The circle begins. With half-hearted shrugs and fingertips mussing the carpet, one by one, these new acquaintances rattle off facts in bored tones. They have wildlife indigenous only there. They eat mutton. They began as Polynesian communities. I feel my chest tightening, my stomach churning. My words about the failed Burke and Wills exploration, miscommunication between adventurers, and surviving and dying in the outback will not fit here. I'll stick out before I've ever even left Tennessee. Leaning over to Alicia, I slide my book under my crossed legs and ask her for three facts. It is the smallest continent, I hear myself saying. Many farmers raise sheep. James Cook is supposedly the first European discoverer. And then it is no longer my turn.
Okay, our last reader tonight.